Welcome back to another episode of the Psyche Behind the Physique, where we discuss all things mental, physical, hormonal, nutritional, and emotional to help you unlock your highest potential. I am so excited to share a wonderful resource with you guys today. My dear friend, Ollie Petrovic. Is that how we say it?
Petrovich.
Petrovich, you've told me this before. Today, we're discussing perfectionism and its impact on our mindset and our ability to be successful on a health and fitness journey. So, without further ado, Ollie, start by just introducing yourself and telling us your specialty and what you do for a living.
Sure. First of all, thank you so much for having me. My name is Ollie or Olivera. I am a licensed mental health counselor and also a certified and trained yoga instructor as well. And so my passion but involves really marrying those two and combining mental health with mindfulness. And I own my own private practice here in St. Pete, Florida, really focusing on trauma healing as well as grief, anxiety, really anything wellness. But I would say those three are my biggest passions right now.
Cool. I'll be sure to put your contact information in the description below. So if anyone wants to get in contact with you after this podcast, they definitely can.
Yes, thank you.
Of course. So today, starting out, I just kind of want to give our audience a bird's eye view and a broad understanding of perfectionism. I think a good place for us to start is defining perfectionism
Yeah.
and helping our audience to discern how it manifests in our lives, and particularly in the context of health and fitness.
Yeah, so really perfectionism is just characterized by having high standards that are oftentimes very unrealistic or unachievable. So at the core, it stems from unresolved trauma. And I also think it's important to define what does trauma mean, because I know sometimes there are different definitions, or assumptions of what trauma is, but really trauma is an emotional response that stems from a distressing event that happened in the past or a series of events that negatively impact us physically as well as emotionally. So in context of perfectionism, maybe some trauma could be having an overly critical parent that often shamed us or punished us for making mistakes. And then we develop that need for, my train of thought. Fuck.
For being perfection, for being
Yes,
perfect.
where am I going to restart from this? Where can we retake this?
Well, you had said that they, when you're dealing with a parent that sometimes can be overly controlling or maybe
Yeah,
dictating
so like,
things.
in the context of health and fitness, it could be a trauma, with that could be having a parent that's really overly critical, that shames us or punishes us for making mistakes, or maybe withholds love and affection and only rewards us when we exceed our standards. So oftentimes traumatized individuals develop this need of control to prevent that emotional response from occurring, and this is what results in perfectionism.
Yeah, and I can definitely see this too, in the way that it manifests in even my athletes that I work with personally. You know, we'll get started and maybe we've identified some actionables, such as, you know, ideally we want you getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Ideally, we want you hitting 130 grams of protein per day. Ideally, we want you hitting 6,000 steps per day. And maybe they're getting 6,000 4 days out of the week, but the other three, they've got 5,500. And maybe this week, baby was up crying one night and they only got 4 hours of broken sleep. And, you know, when sometimes I'll go through a new athlete's check-in and I'll see these glaring, very self-deprecating comments where the only thing that's highlighted is the failure. So I think you bring up a really great point here in where we can do a better job when we're working on kind of eroding or getting rid of some of this perfectionistic mindset, at identifying maybe previously in our journey somewhere we were judged or we were punished for not exceeding the bare minimum and not necessarily giving ourselves grace where grace is due. So
And
why does
that's a really, you know, that was a really, really great example and something that I'll oftentimes ask my clients to kind of explore their own perfectionistic thoughts is, you know, let's say the thought or, you know, the belief is like really, really negative, right? You know, like I'm a failure, right? You know, I might ask them to repeat that, but then ask themselves, whose voice is that? Is that your voice or is that coming from someone else? Maybe a parent, you know, maybe you learned that somewhere, heard that oftentimes somewhere in your past. And so oftentimes these core beliefs, they stem from somewhere.
Yeah, and I talked in last week's episode too, it was on goal setting. And when we're talking about goals, to take yourself out of it and to actually turn it into the third person, and this may be a tool that our audience can also leverage when they are working through some of these unrealistic perfectionistic tendencies. And instead of saying, you know, I'm a failure, turn it on you, Maddie, you are a failure. Like, how does it feel? And is that really true? So, I mean, diving into this a little bit deeper, Ollie, why do you think that so many people feel the need to get things 100% right out of the gate?
That's a really good question. And to answer that, I kind of want to talk about classical conditioning. So if you've taken like an intro to psych class, you might have heard that with Pavlov's dogs, right? So he used to, or he, you know, he rang the bells, fed his dogs, repeated that over and over and over. And then just the sound of the bell ringing, for instance, produced, oh, dang it, I didn't explain this really well. I'm so sorry. This is so
It
hard.
made them salivate, and then they would come to get
Yeah, I know. I just didn't
like a
explain that
treat,
the way that
right?
I wanted to. I'm struggling right now. I'm so sorry. I feel like my brain is just like all over the place. Okay, let me go back and explain the classical conditioning the way that I want to explain it, the way that I feel like is going to make sense. But okay, so like I said, you know, I want to answer this by explaining classical conditioning. So if you've taken an intro to psych class, you may have heard of Pavlov's dogs. And so what he did was he had his dogs and he would ring a bell and then he would present them with food and the dogs would salivate. And so over and over, the more he repeated that, you know, the dogs would produce that saliva. And then just from the sound of the bell, the dogs would then just salivate, even if there was no food in front of them. And so they learn to associate the ringing of the bell with, you know, something that's going to make them, you know, eat. And so oftentimes, how this can manifest in perfectionism, for instance, is let's say, you know, someone was only rewarded for exceeding standards over and over and over and over and over again. Then over time, people can develop that urge to exceed the standard because they've been rewarded, I'm sorry. And the reverse can be true too. So if you were constantly punished, for instance, for not getting all A's or, you know, messing up on your, you know, goals, for instance, over time, you can start to kind of feel that impending doom of being punished, even though in the present moment there is no threat, but your body remembers that. And so there's this book called The Body Keep the Score that talks all about that, where we store our trauma in our bodies. And so it doesn't matter if even in the present there's no threat, our body still reacts from that. And so that's where people
I
can
love
see.
that point that you're making. What I just thought of actually, and this is kind of taking it out of the context of perfectionism, but really not. Growing up as a kid, you know, I was punished if I didn't clear my plate. And so what that created was, as I got older and I started tracking my macros, which is required of anyone who's essentially wanting to drop body fat or wanting to heal their relationship with food sometimes. Or for competitors, we have to zero out our macros, meaning we have to hit our protein to a certain degree, hit our carbs and hit our fats. And I remember that really kind of like making me reminisce on I have to finish all of this food. And it's taken me some time now that I'm navigating more into intuitive eating in this season of my life to regain what true hunger is and true fullness is. It doesn't always mean this perfectionistic eating behavior where you finish all of your food. So, in regards to perfectionism, are there different types of perfectionism? And if so, which types are most commonly seen in someone maybe on a health and fitness journey?
Yeah, so if there are like specific terms maybe that you're looking for, I might not know what those are. However, what I can say is that there's two really main types of perfectionism that I might see in my work and that I know of. Those that are coming, like directed at us, and then those that are directed towards others, right? So we have these high standards for ourselves, these controlling behaviors, and then and or we might project that onto others. So having high expectations for others, for instance, wanting to control what other people say or do. So those are really the two main types that I'll see. And then perfectionism can also manifest in a variety of different mental health conditions. And for some other time, I'll talk about what I feel about diagnosing. I'm not really big on that, truthfully. However, what I can say is, if you struggle with perfectionism, oftentimes you might find yourself also struggling with some sort of anxiety disorder, maybe PTSD, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, which is a little bit different than OCD, as well as, of course, disordered eating like anorexia, bulimia, to name a few. So we really see those kinds of behaviors and thought patterns manifest in different ways for different people.
Yeah, I think kind of alluding back to what I first said when we started this conversation, I think in my field, in my scope, where I see it most is it's very easy when we start an endeavor, begin an endeavor with a coach to articulate exactly where we want to get to. It's very rare that I get on a discovery call with a new athlete and they cannot articulate to me where they want to be in 6 months or a year's time. But where they really struggle, where I come in, is when I onboard a new athlete, I create for them something called a discovery or a destination postcard. And what this is it essentially breaks down this very gargantuan goal that they may have, such as getting on stage when they have never tracked a macro in their life, or such as conceiving a baby when their diet is a wreck, their stress management is a wreck, their cycles are irregular, they're on hormonal birth control. You've got a lot of stepping stones that you have to first cross before you can get to that goal. And so I create this roadmap in this destination postcard to help them regroup and see the stepping stones that it's going to take to get from A to Z. And I think this perfectionistic mindset can almost set this unrealistic expectation that anything except reaching that Z goal in 2 months' time is inadequate, when that's really not the case. There's a lot of marks of adequacy and achievement that lead up to that big goal. And so this is where perfectionism, I think, can really erode at our self-efficacy and our momentum in a health and fitness journey.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And I really love what you're doing with that because I think that just sets your clients up or athletes with realistic perspectives, right? Like, yeah, we want to get you from A to Z. However, here are potential barriers that we just need to be mindful of so that we can achieve them.
Right. And I think I have seen the impact of perfectionism manifests itself in many, many ways, even in my own personal journey, but certainly in other athletes as well, ranging from things like, I mean, starting out here, procrastination, right? When we feel like we have this kind of all or nothing mindset, it's either I'm failing or I'm doing this perfectly. The in between, in that gray, we're inadequate. We're failing. And so we shouldn't even try. I see this a lot actually with athletes who are on vacation, right? You know, you're home, you're in your environment, you're cooking your meals, you know where you have your local gym to go to. You've got your cardio protocols, you know, you've got your supplements, and then all of a sudden you go on vacation. And while you may not necessarily have a full box gym, you've got some dumbbells. There's likely a treadmill there. There's a continental breakfast. You can get some eggs and some yogurt, but all of a sudden it's different. And it's probably going to take a little bit of inconveniencing. And we're probably not going to be perfect. And so we just procrastinate. We just push it off. Well, I'll be perfect when I get back. And we avoid an opportunity here to learn. I had a coach who actually, this is the worst coach I've probably ever worked with in my life, but he taught me something very valuable. I try to take away the good stuff from my mentors. And he taught me when I was stressed out over the holidays and I was having to track my macros and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have control over this food. He said, you know, I want you to shift your mindset. I want you to embrace this challenge as like Tetris. And I played Tetris as a kid. I was obsessed with the Game Boy and Tetris. And so it resonated with me because I was like, oh my gosh, I can see how that I can simply shift this from avoiding an educational opportunity that ultimately tracking my macros outside of my comfort zone is a skill that I will at some point need to build, right? In order
Absolutely.
to be a sustainable approach to my fitness goals. I'm going to need to push myself out of my comfort zone. And so I removed the necessity for perfection so that I wouldn't avoid an opportunity. Because even when we fail, it's still an opportunity to learn.
Right. It's just a learning experience just to see what we could have done differently. It doesn't mean that we're a failure, right? It just means that there was something or maybe, information that we were missing. And now we perhaps can reflect and know what that information is so that we can try to apply that in future scenarios.
For sure. And I feel so passionate about this particular subject because in my own journey, I became so set in my ways. I was so, perfectionism was taken to such an extreme for me, to the point where Ollie, like I got up in the morning and if I didn't hit 8,000 steps by 10 a.m., I had failed. If it was, you know, I gave myself this very restrictive rule that I had developed where I was only allowed to go on one date a month, one date. And even then, I had to have control over the restaurant, the menu, what I was going to track, what I was going to put in. And I realized this is, I mean, I'm not even giving all the details in this simple podcast that we're talking on with perfection, but my whole day had became very regimented and very ceremonial, I guess is the best way to put it. And I became very rigid. I became very obsessive with my behaviors, you know, and while I was also avoiding social outings, I was becoming isolated. And what this led to was ultimately exactly that, isolation, burnout. And then when I did start venturing out beyond my comfort zone, guilt and shame, when I had no reason to feel guilty or shameful. It was just that my perfectionism was taken to a very unhealthy degree.
As it often does, truthfully. And let me ask you if it's okay. What do you think were some benefits to those kinds of perfectionistic behaviors, right? The having to control exactly where you ate at all times, and how many steps and how you started your day, We talked about, I know
So,
you highlighted some of the negatives, but like, what are some of the positives of all of that?
yeah, and I think in, I love that you asked that question because I have seen in so many areas of my life where those perfectionistic tendencies can serve me so well. You know, in the cleanliness of my home, I cannot stand a messy space. You know, my inbox, having all my messages cleared out by the end of the day. I don't like any notifications on my phone, in my texts, in my emails. You know, even in my heightened awareness now as an intuitive eater in this season of my life, when I go out to eat, like because I was so rigid, I did learn what it looks like to have a balanced meal. And I now see certainly, and I mean, no pun intended, but the importance of balance But I recognize too how these tendencies, especially in the world of competing and people that are very into their health and fitness, a lot of us have some element of perfectionism within us. It's all about finding ways to leverage that perfectionism in a healthy way and not
That
in a way
part,
that's
that
going to
is
be
so key what you just
destructive.
said. Because there are benefits to anything that we do. I mean, we can thank the limbic system for that. We're motivated by rewards, right? And so the perfectionism has its positives, its benefits. Otherwise, we wouldn't do the thing, right? And so identifying what those positives or benefits are, and then finding out ways where maybe we can achieve some of those benefits, but with more balance.
Yeah, and I think that that really comes into play too when you're dealing with something like this. And this is not just like a shameless plug of our team, but really working with not just any coach, but a coach that cares about your mental well-being and your longevity. I've seen a
Absolutely.
lot of athletes in this sport, particularly in the realm of, high-level athletes in the realm of competing, or even women who maybe they've had a baby and they feel so far from of their previous identity, really get sucked into, oh, I'm going to work with X, Y, and Z coach who I see yields X, Y, and Z results. And it causes them to cultivate, if it's not already there, a very perfectionistic mentality. This, when I'm working with a coach, I've literally had conversations with girls on social media who have said, basically, in for a lack of better words, I need to get my shit together before I can work with you. And there's nothing that hurts my heart more than hearing a comment like that, because it implies that they have a very unrealistic standard set for what it means to work and collaborate with a coach. And this could be because of unresolved trauma, right? Maybe in the past when they've done, when they're in season, they're really in season, or when they're on plan and they're losing weight, they're following a meal plan and they've got the workouts done. I did Beachbody, I did 21-Day Fix, I did P90X. I know what it's like to be in one of those rigid programs, but that's really not what health coaching is all about. So as we progress through this podcast, for our listeners that are struggling with perfectionism, what are some practical strategies that you leverage as a practitioner to help athletes or people overcome perfectionism, but in the realm of their health and fitness journey?
That's a really, really great question. And there are so many different angles and approaches that you can go about doing this. So, from a cognitive behavioral perspective, right, kind of assessing our thoughts and our behaviors, we can challenge perfectionistic thoughts with something that is more realistic, right? Which I know is so hard to do, right? But even just having that subtle shift and then repeating it. And so, that's the big thing is like when we start challenging some of these anxious or perfectionistic thoughts or even behaviors, it's really, really hard to do in the beginning. It's supposed to be hard because change never comes from that place of complacency. So if we're comfortable, then we're not growing, right? And so it really comes down to repetition, right? That's how the brain learns is through repetition. So just the more and more we repeat, these positive statements or compassionate statements, or challenge the perfectionistic thoughts with something that's more realistic. The more and more we do that, over time, it's going to start to feel more real. So in the beginning, it feels kind of like a fake it till you make it kind of situation, and it's supposed to feel that way. And then as you repeat, that's when it starts to feel a little bit more real, right? You can also, maybe reassociate a new meaning behind some of these triggers. So let's just say, food, right, is a trigger. It makes you anxious, and it leads to some of those perfectionistic thoughts. Well, maybe we can reassociate a new meaning with food, where in the past it was probably associated with something anxiety provoking, as it would with a trauma situation. Now maybe we can co incorporate like some five senses to start to associate food with something relaxing or positive, right? And so, maybe we're at a dinner table with our loved ones and really being intentional with that, right?
I really love exactly what you're saying. I want to piggyback on that really quickly
Go for it.
because I ask questions to my athletes every single week that extend far beyond the scope of basically, did you get your shit done? I ask a lot of questions that prod and pick at mindset, and I encourage dialogue back and forth. And I can generally pick up on, because of my own previous traumas, when someone is feeling very critical of themselves for not hitting a mark. I've seen this a lot in particular with new moms. I work with a lot of new moms, and I'll work with, especially for not just new moms, right, where they've welcomed a baby into the world, or maybe they're pregnant and now they're having food aversions and nausea that they've never dealt with. Another area where I see this happening is in athletes coming out of a very restrictive fat loss phase, or maybe something that's very extreme, like a contest prep. You kind of, a lot of people, new moms are going to struggle with hitting all their macros, right? It's like, I really can only focus on like calories and protein. But a lot of times we're not able to clearly articulate that. No different than an athlete that's coming off of 90 minutes of Stairmaster, 1,000 calories, and being in the gym 7 days a week, and not necessarily even knowing consciously that what they are feeling is burnout and that they need to ask for a week off. I don't necessarily wait for my athletes to ask these things. I can sense it. And so I think that what I do as a coach is I'll start to inject questions that will evoke maybe a feeling of relief in our athletes. So if I'm starting to see this resistance, or I'm starting to see this very self-deprecating self-talk in check-ins, I failed here. I didn't hit this mark. I didn't meet this week. I'm gonna try harder, but they're not really articulating what they can do different. It's because they know consciously or subconsciously that for right now, there isn't anything they can do different. And so the expectation, maybe for a phase, needs to change. And so as a coach, I'll take this gargantuan goal that is going to require perfectionism, and we'll just change it a little bit. So maybe for someone who's listening to this, if you're struggling with tracking protein, carbs, and fats, and I keep going back to nutrition because that's a really easy example, maybe you're just going to work on calories and protein. And Ollie, when you were talking about disassociating meaning to certain things, it made me think, I know a lot of people will come in, like I've talked about, with a very articulate, I want to lose weight, so tell me what to eat and when to eat it. And I think that that can lead to breeding more of these perfectionistic tendencies. And I love that you're associating, I'll put habits in for my athletes when they go out to eat. That's like, can we just identify a nutritional aspect of this meal that was, I got fiber in at this dinner that I went out to eat at. Can I identify how this meal maybe benefited me emotionally? Can I identify when I left this meal how I felt? For once, I wasn't stuffed to the brim. For once, I didn't have food guilt. For once, I felt like when I left this meal, I felt satiated. I felt like I made wise choices. Yeah, I turned down the bread, but it wasn't from a scarcity mindset. It wasn't from restriction or punishment or guilt. I genuinely didn't want the bread tonight. And I had a good time with the people that I shared the meal with. And I think that by really working on that healing, changing the goal, allowing the goals to be dynamic, setting SMART goals, right? Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely goals.
Gratitude
And
is what I heard, like a lot of gratitude, which is a really great shift that we can make that can substantially improve our mood and our thoughts a lot as well. Like having gratitude, I can afford these kinds of food. I have family members that love me, that want to enjoy these meals with me.
And I think too, encouraging almost failing. Like, expect some
Just
upheaval.
allowing that to be a part of the process because I'm going to
Oh my
explain.
gosh.
I'd like to, if it's okay, just explain right now the science behind why this is a realistic expectation with change. So we all have neural pathways in our brain, and these are our highways for our habits. And they are quite literally like grooves in our brain. And so this is the way that I best explain it to my clients, right? Is pretend you are hiking to the top of a mountain, right? And if you're following a hiking trail, it's really easy to get to the top. You just follow the hiking trail that goes there, and then you're there, right? And this is our habits. That's why it's so easy for us to slide back into old ways. Now, if I say, okay, go hike to the other side of the mountain, but there's no hiking trail, it's hard. You slide back, maybe you stumble, maybe you need to take a lot of breaks, but eventually you get to the top. And the more and more you do that and walk on this new side of the mountain, you form a new hiking trail. And that's how we form new habits. And so it's absolutely realistic to make these mistakes because, quite literally, we're creating new hiking trails in our brain. So it's part of the process and it's necessary too.
I love that. I absolutely love that. It's making me think about a specific example from a check-in that I had today. And this,
Sure.
she's 2 weeks into our program, crushing it. She's getting ready for her wedding. And she said, oh, I screwed up this week. She said, Monday, I skipped the gym and set me up for a terrible week. I had to go 4 days in a row. I hate missing Monday. Monday is what sets the tone for my week. And instead of saying, well, when you miss a Monday, instead of acknowledging that, which I have had coaches that acknowledge my failures, I said, you know what? Glad it happened. Glad it happened 2 weeks in. Now we know. Now we know that next week we can miss Tuesday, but we're not going to miss another Monday because
Right.
we know now from that little oopsie that Mondays are important for us. But had we not had that failure, we would have never known, right? Just like somebody who hoards macros. I used to do this. I used to have my coaches set macros for me, and then I would hoard them for the end of the day because I knew that I would get like hungry and I want to just gorge on food. Well, I was creating that for myself. And so it wasn't until I realized, oh, it's causing me to binge at night that I could change the behavior, but I had to first have that oopsie, have that moment of realization in order to change my behaviors. And so, as a coach, I really work on reframing these failures as learning opportunities. I work on also identifying, okay, where is, I'm not seeing the world through rose-colored glasses, but what did go well this week? And I challenge my athletes in their check-ins to confront that question and to always acknowledge it. Because we have to pick out the areas where we're gaining momentum, just like I have outlined for our athletes in their destination postcard, that is getting us to that goal. I know you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but are you stopping along the way to pick up a pebble? To realize that you're collecting a lot of data on yourself. You're getting really introspective. You're healing trauma. You're learning new things about yourself along this way. And this is what we call celebrating small wins.
I
Not
love
necessarily.
that too. Yeah, the celebrating the small wins and acknowledging what went well rather than what didn't. Because, okay, so like the way that we treat ourselves needs to be the same way we treat other people, right? So, like, how would you feel? Because I know that we have a friendship too. How would you feel if I came up to you and I just picked you apart and I'm like, well, you did this wrong and that wrong, and you might want to work on that, and that wasn't good enough, right? You wouldn't want to be my friend because I speak to you so negatively. So that's why oftentimes when we adopt that kind of language towards ourself, we kind of don't like ourselves either. And so we need to also speak to ourselves the same way that we would speak to other people, to help kind of create that motivation. And yeah.
And I think too, when you're on this journey alone, sometimes you're so fixated on, for example, the scale, right? It's like I'm cleaning up my diet, I'm cutting alcohol, I'm gonna do HIIT workouts at Orange Theory 5 times a week. I'm gonna get to 150. I'm gonna get there. And then every day you step on the scale and it's 155 and it's 156 and damn, it's 157. And it's like you're so focused on the outcome that you're not even acknowledging the fact that this week you didn't go out and drink once. This week, you took time for yourself. You said no to your boss. This week, you went to Orange Theory 4 out of 5 times. Celebrate these small wins because I can guarantee we talked about this in last week's podcast episode. Getting the actual goal obtained means nothing. Don't celebrate the outcome. You're going to get to that goal weight and it's not going to matter. Celebrate the process. Celebrate the achievements that you're making along the way. It'll make that goal all that much more fulfilling.
Did you know that research shows that we learn better through positive reinforcement rather than negative reinforcement?
Really?
Yeah. It's a legit thing. I don't know what the study is off the top of my head. I can always try to find it right after our call, so we can link that for the viewers. But it is more effective to learn from positive associations than negative ones. And that's why speaking kindly to ourselves, compassionately acknowledging our wins, is more effective long term than beating ourselves down.
I love that. I love that. So, as we are kind of wrapping up this call and ending on, just being more positive, I think one of the terms that comes to mind when I think about taking action and not necessarily holding this standard in this expectation of perfection over our heads. The term that comes to mind for me personally is messy action. And I know we kind of voice memoed back and forth on what messy action was earlier. So if you need some help with this, let me know. But this is something that I really love to encourage our athletes to do when they're starting their journey. I think the boldest thing that you can do is raise your hand and say, I want to go after this. I want to go after this with you or with another coach. So how can taking messy action really benefit someone more than taking action under the expectation of perfectionism?
So like messy action, is us achieving our goal. I'm sorry, working on our goals without that expectation of perfectionism, right? And so, I really think that it's important to start with realistic goals that honor our unique needs, goals, and preferences, right? Taking into account these subtle differences. I remember you mentioned the new mom, right? And tailoring her fitness journey accordingly. And that was the very first thing I was also thinking about too, as I was reflecting on what are some examples of messy action in action, right? And so, for instance, maybe like a new mom who's never exercised before, that works 9 to 5 and has a baby, right? Now, maybe it's not realistic for her to be working out, lifting weights like 5 times a week. Maybe her perfectionism says that that's attainable, but that might not be realistic based off of her unique circumstances, right? If she has some hormonal fluctuations, right, or is going through postpartum, that might be really, really difficult to go from, primarily a stationary lifestyle to something active 5 times a week, right? And so messy action could look like gradually increasing activity from little to more, right? Maybe that starts with walks just to begin with, and then one day at the gym, and then we slowly and gradually increase from there. Or maybe we realize that we don't like the gym and we don't like lifting weights because it's boring, right? But we're more called to Pilates and that's something that we're interested in. And so letting go of this idea and expectation, well, if I have to be fit or if I want to look fit, I have to look like and be like the other women who are, lifting weights. Well, no, maybe we can do the same exact thing, for instance, with Pilates or like a vinyasa yoga class, right? And so adjusting to that and what our preferences are, or, letting go of, I have to be a 5 a.m. gym girly, which I'm not a morning person, as you know. I tried to be, right? Because I wanted to fit into this perfect mold of what a successful, high achieving woman is, but that's just never been me for as long as I can remember. And so maybe the morning is not for me or for the new mom. And maybe it's in the evening for her instead when her significant other comes home from work and can watch that baby, right? So those are all just a bunch of different factors that we can take into account to tailor a plan or follow through based off of our unique needs, goals, and
And
preferences.
I love this element of a health and fitness journey. Because a health and fitness journey can be so eye-opening and very exposing when it comes to identifying not only our true values, our true goals for ourselves, but also what speaks to us in terms of movement, in terms of nutrition, in terms of maybe even what we want for ourselves. I know that a lot of us have in our heads an ideal, right? The number of times, Ollie, that I've gotten on a discovery call with a new athlete and they'll say something along the lines of, well, I should be 140 pounds, or
Yeah, they
yeah,
should.
but when I was working this job 5 years ago before I have a kid, I was a size two, and I really did. I felt my best then. Maybe they did, but I think it is important that we give ourselves the space to discover what is our version of perfect, and not necessarily to go into a journey with this should version of perfect. I should do this. This is the only way to go about this in order to get what I want. A lot of women think too, like, oh, I'm gonna have to track macros in order to get there. Well, if you go into that with that, oh, begrudgingly tracking macros, that's a telltale sign that you're not gonna succeed. You're gonna be burnt out. You're gonna be perfect for the first 2 weeks, but you're going to be burnt out. So I think it's important to also watch, pay attention, turn your eyes and ears, and turn on your introspective analysis of, like, how do you feel when you think about these should behaviors? How do you feel about, oh, I should go for runs? Oh, I should strength train on the weekends? If you're feeling resentment or resistance there, maybe don't ignore that. Maybe that's a sign that you're trying to be perfect and it's not truly perfect, right? It's what you think is perfect, because there's a much more perfect plan that's gonna resonate with you a lot better. And I think that you alluded to that even with the mom that maybe doesn't enjoy strength training. Now, conversely, if we remove this should do behavior or should do expectation or this perfectionistic standard that we have, a lot of times we'll exceed it. And I'll give you an example of that. I got on a discovery call with an athlete about a month ago. When we got on that call, she said, oh, well, I'm trying to get into the gym 5 or 6 days a week. And I said, okay. And I created her training program. It was for 3 days a week. She messaged me. She said, I can't find the other two workouts. I said, no. We're going to start with just three. She blew it out of the park. After 2 weeks, she was asking me for two more. And she said, I've never been this consistent in my life. Sometimes, if you set this unrealistic expectation or this perfectionistic expectation of yourself, you're going to find that you're consistently falling flat on your face, that you're consistently not hitting the mark. And it's because you perceive it as being difficult because it has to be perfect. And when you remove the necessity for perfection, you actually will hit that same target. In fact, you may exceed it.
I also think it's important too to acknowledge that as women, especially, we're not the same person across our life. This is also proven by another study where they actually studied personalities over the span of 70 years. Our personalities, yes, do change, but also beyond that, like in with our bodies, right? Like a size two in high school, well, yeah. You were in high school, your metabolism was super duper high. Maybe you played a bunch of sports. And then as women, we grow and evolve, we are going to look a lot differently, and that's also okay. So letting go of these expectations of, who we once were and having to get back to that, and also accepting who we are today and focusing on what's within our control and what isn't, right? You know, we can't always control certain things. And so we have to accept that. And this ties in with another practical kind of step that we can practice, comes from dialectical behavioral therapy called radical acceptance, which is a really, really hard concept for a lot of folks to grasp, right? Oftentimes when we think of acceptance, we think of passive, right? Just kind of going with the flow. But really, it really comes from Buddhism, right? A lot of Eastern philosophies. And it's not really, you know, just condoning the present moment and being okay with it, but reducing our suffering that comes with it. So the best analogy, I'm a big analogy kind of gal. So the best analogy I can come up with radical acceptance, right, is like pretend you have a hot stove right in front of you. You can do two things. With one hand, you put your hand on the hot stove and you take it off immediately. You accepted it. It's there, right? You burned yourself, but you took your hand off. The alternative is you put your hand on the other, you use your other hand, you put that on the stove and you refuse to accept it because you disagree with it, because you wish it was different. You know, don't want it to be there, whatever, right? And you fight it, you dig your hand deeper. Well, eventually you're gonna have to take your hand off and your hand's gonna be scorched, right? So in both instances, your hand got burnt, but one just hurts less simply because you accepted it. And so that's another thing that we can practice in our day-to-day with our health is rather than focusing and ruminating on what isn't, right, or how we wish things could be, right? Just accepting the reality for what it is. It's like, yeah, I have less hours in the day now because I'm a new mom and working 9 to 5, you know, and I can't, you know, work out 5 times a week. That's okay. I can do one time, for instance. I've accepted that.
Well, and this goes back to how we started this podcast today, which was avoidance, right? If we can't hit the expectation that we've set, we completely avoid it and we sabotage,
I was about
right?
to
When in
say, it sounds like
reality,
self-sabotaging, oftentimes because of fear of judgment, right? We're afraid others are going to judge us. So either we'll self-sabotage or maybe we'll judge ourselves
I was gonna
before
say,
other people can do it first.
And so for our women and maybe men that are watching this very podcast, wrapping up here, how can our listeners begin to really reframe their mindset from needing to be perfect to acceptance to identifying these achievements to focusing more on, I guess the best word would be progress over being perfect.
So I'm a really big fan of affirmations, okay? And so really quickly, I want to differentiate between something that is compassionate versus delusionally positive. I don't think it's good to be delusionally positive. You know, because it's also important to acknowledge, right, what isn't working, right, so that we can correct it. And so we want to be realistic, but we also want to be compassionate, right? How would maybe we confront our friend? You know, can we adopt similar language towards ourselves? So affirmations are a really, really great tool. Focusing affirmation on that progress exactly that we're trying to attain. Or what I really, really like to do is focusing affirmations on functions of body parts rather than how they look. Right? Our legs aren't supposed to look a certain type of way. I know, like with competitions, yes. But, like, for instance, right? Like, you know, like our legs are there to move us from point A to point B. Our arms are there to protect ourselves and our loved ones, right? You know, our stomach is there to hold our digestive system and allow us to enjoy foods, right? And so, repeating mantras or affirmations that focus on body functions or progress, right? You know, I did this well, right? Repeating that over and over every day, that's how we
And
start to make it feel like it's real.
I think too, God, this hits so deep. This hits so deep, especially for me, considering what I went through, knowing that I had 3 years where I didn't have a normal hormonal cycle. I didn't have a period. And the things that I would have done to just need to go to Walgreens and buy an $8 box of Super Plus, like you wouldn't believe.
Please.
And it was like, then you get your cycle and you're feeling bloated and your body dysmorphic and you don't want to go to the gym and hell, you're craving chocolate like you've never craved before. And I remember sitting there and looking down at my little pooch and going like, oh my God, like my body can actually hold and conceive a baby. Like, this is such a beautiful thing. And it's not seeing the world through rose-colored glasses. Don't get me wrong. It's still
Absolutely.
shitty to go through. And no one wants to bleed for 5 days straight. It sucks. But at the same time, it's like, it's also about flip over the coin and just acknowledge the other side, right? This week, maybe you didn't get to the gym 5 days, but did you get there four? You know, did you have a good realistic reason? Maybe your son got sick and the sitter called out. Are you being too hard on yourself? Focus on the progress. Where were you 3 months ago?
Absolutely. And it
Have
all
you
starts
zoomed
with our
out?
thoughts. It really does. It
Right.
all starts with our thoughts and the language that we use to ourselves. Cognitive behavioral therapy teaches us that's why manifestation works. It's not the woo-woo-y manifestation, right? Wishful thinking, right? It's thoughts and then action that line up with the thoughts, right? And so the more and more we think and say, you know, these positive or compassionate things and acknowledge our wins, what went well, having gratitude, right? The more and more we start to condition ourselves, right? Going back to classical conditioning, it's all programming. The more and more we start to repeat these things, writing them down, posting them on our mirrors, right? Just flooding our brain with positive messages, the more and more it starts to become integrated in our life. And then, of course, you know, as a therapist, I also want to suggest, you know, a lot of these things can be from trauma. And so, working with a trauma-informed therapist that specializes in something like EMDR or ART, to help dissolve some of these triggers will help additionally line up the feeling with the thought that we're trying to create.
And I think too, just kind of wrapping up here, a lot of our listeners too may not necessarily see the effects of 7 days of
Right.
achievements or a month of achievements, right? I was sitting
No,
last
usually it
night
takes
going
like
through
about
my
21 days.
I was sitting here last night going through my iPhone and realizing, you know, you take pictures in the gym. I take pictures in the gym every time I go. And just how significantly my physique has changed over 3 years' time. But you forget, you see your body every single day, right? And I think the same thing happens with behaviors. Maybe one of our listeners is listening to this right now and they're just feeling like, man, all the other girls, they're growing, they're building muscle. And I'm just back here, my glutes will not grow. And it's like, go back and look at those pictures from 2 years ago. 'Cause like you look at yourself every single day and ask yourself practically, like, are you in the gym training glutes 3 days a week? Are you eating your food? Are you treating your body right? If you are, you're checking off your boxes. You're the one that's setting this unrealistic expectation for yourself. And Instagram, my girl, is a highlight reel. So focus.
Exactly. I know that there's a term for that, and I'm blanking out the top of my head what that is, but because we're with ourselves all the time, it can be quite difficult to see that progress. I know just myself, I experienced that too because I train now martial arts, and I'm starting to actually notice the results that I'm seeing, but for a while there, I didn't. And it's because we're with ourselves all the time. That's why people having like a support system can be super helpful, right? Because they can also point out some of the progress and changes that we've made. That's why I also encourage journaling. You know, especially in terms of like those thoughts, because you can quite literally see your thoughts evolve with each entry that you do. And so we oftentimes do have these changes. It's just sometimes we're blinded to it. Change blindness, that's what it's called. New
Change
that comes to
blindness.
me.
Yay. Well, on that note, I think it's time. Hopefully our listeners have gotten through their cardio sessions or have made it home on their commutes. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of The Psyche Behind the Physique. And thank you, Ollie, so much for coming on and sharing your insight with our listeners. Today,
Absolutely.
I challenge you, our listeners, to take one imperfect step towards your health and fitness goals today. If you are interested in embarking on a personalized health and fitness journey that is all-encompassing, the link to apply for one-on-one functional health coaching or contest prep coaching is always in the description, and Ollie's information will be down there as well. Be sure to tune in next week. You do not want to miss what we have in store for you next.